The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Good morning. It's approaching 6 minutes past nine and we're live for another Tuesday. This one, the 9th of January, 2024. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio with me, Greg Hughes, and... Well, we've a busy one lined up for you as always. Later on, Community Garda information, where you hear the latest appeals and information from Garda Síochána Síochána First. And we're across all the big stories, both locally, nationally and beyond. The lines are open for you to get involved in the conversation. Trigger your own on 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 07491 25000. And if you want to email the show, comments at highlandradio.com. If you want to watch the programme as well, if you're at home or wherever you are and it suits you to do so, don't forget we're on YouTube, so you can open up your YouTube app and your smart TV or your Fire Stick or your Google TV if you have one of those, and just type in Highland Radio Ireland. Subscribe to it, it's handier that way, and watch us there. You can take us across your mobile devices on YouTube, and we're on Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland Radio News and Sport, and we're on X/Twitter as well. Okay, let's start with a look at the front of the pages. In fact, what we're going to do is go straight to the back page of the Irish Daily Mail, because as we were flagging on the programme with Oisín yesterday, Jim McGuinness might be back winning matches, but his second coming as Donegal manager isn't exactly going to plan after he was hit with a proposed 8-week sideline suspension when Donegal thumped an experimental Armagh by 3-16 to 1-6 in the first round of the Dr McKenna Cup last Wednesday. It looked like the perfect way to officially launch a new era for the man who guided Donegal to the 2012 All-Ireland. And yet, the one big detail got lost in the print of that win, promising young player Finbar Rorty's date of birth. Competition rules for senior inter-county football state. Players must be 18 by the start of that calendar year to be eligible to play. The Niamh Connell teenager was just shy of his 18th birthday when he featured, and what seems like a simple error on Donegal's part could cost them dearly. McGuinness has been hit with a proposed 8-week suspension whilst the player, and I'll just go back into page 46, whilst the player himself has been suspended for 2 weeks. McGuinness has already suggested an appeal against any ban is likely after his Donegal squad beat Tyrone by 15 points to 110 on Sunday in the second round of the competition. We'll talk about that, of course, a little later on. Interested in your views out there. A lot of people online seem to think that it's sour grapes as to why there's such a heavy suspension, but it is a rule that's been in place for quite some time as well, too, so... we shall wait and see. Donegal Democrat this morning. A technical report is awaited in the case of a man charged with a hit-and-run collision in which a 9-year-old boy was killed in Bundoran. Sergi Kelly has been charged in connection with the September collision that resulted in the death of Ronan Wilson from Kildress in County Tyrone. Ronan was killed in the incident on Atlantic Way at around 9:20 p.m. on September 23rd, 2023. Kelly, a 23-year-old with an address at Upper Mullaghmore, County Sligo, has been charged with three offences under the Road Traffic Act and is currently on bail under strict conditions. On to the Independent this morning, and almost one in five small family-run nursing homes shut down in the first 3 years of the pandemic, leaving many older residents now under the wing of a few for-profit private operators financed by international private equity, a new ESRI report warns today. The largest operator in Ireland is Orpea, which is effectively owned by the French state after safety concerns led to it coming under the control of that country's investment fund. Between February 2020 and December 2022, there were significant closures of small homes, mainly in rural areas. There's been a consolidation of private for-profit long-term care operators driven by recent entrants into the Irish market, who are mainly financed by international private equity, and these opened several large facilities recently, the report said. Now, the current concern is in rural Ireland, will there be spaces available for a population that thankfully is growing older and would need those services, or are they going to be more centralised where the profits are bigger, and so on and so forth? That's certainly a concern. The Irish Times this morning. Sinn Féin MLA Gerry Kelly has said he will study the judgment handed down in the High Court in Belfast yesterday, which labelled a defamation case taken by the former IRA man as an abusive process and criticised his legal action as a slap. That's S-L-A-P-P. It's a legal action taken to discourage legitimate scrutiny by the media and political opponents. But Sinn Féin did not comment when asked if the judgment would prompt any change in the party's attitude to defamation action. Leading figures in the party, including the president, Mary Lou MacDonald, have taken defamation action against media outlets and political opponents in a trend criticised by the National Union of Journalism and free speech groups. Ms. MacDonald defended the practice in a series of interviews over Christmas, but there is known to be growing unease about the political backlash against the party for the spate of legal actions taken in recent years. We'll get something on that before the end of this show. On to the Irish Independent now, and you might remember the riots in Dublin. You'll remember the scenes, won't you? Well, the Garda investigation is ongoing, and there's an update in the Star. Gardaí now have 150 people in their sights for prosecution over the Dublin riots and are working to formally identify them. The paper has learnt that a special unit set up to catch the thugs involved in the riots in the capital last November have amassed almost 20,000 hours of CCTV to help track the suspects down. We have established, that being the paper, that Gardaí probing the November 23 disturbances have a hit list of at least 150 suspects they've isolated on camera being involved in rioting, looting, arson and assault attacks. And perhaps, ironically, some of the best footage, in inverted commas, or some of the footage where people are most easily identifiable is from citizen journalists or self-styled or self-labelled citizens journalists who are often on the ground in amongst the crowd and filming all the faces. So that'll be very useful to the Gardaí, I'm sure. A source said last night there are more than 150 suspects and work is underway in identifying them. As I said, far prefer close-up mobile phone footage to be going through than far-distance CCTV. So you can be sure they've downloaded it all from social media. On to the Sun this morning. Prince Andrew appeared in sex tapes filmed by his billionaire friend Jeffrey Epstein. Bombshell court papers alleged yesterday. The claims, later retracted, which is quite important, heaped further embarrassment on the beleaguered royal. A victim of Epstein also claimed to have seen ex-US President Bill Clinton and billionaire businessman Richard Branson having sex with a woman in the secret footage, which it's been claimed doesn't exist. The incredible allegations were disclosed in the latest tranche of papers that have detailed King Charles's brother taking part in an orgy on Epstein's private Caribbean island. What incredibly unpleasant people, men, people, whatever they are, to have been involved in all of that. And the sooner that, or alleged to have been, according to the papers, the sooner all of that is exposed, the better. The Irish Daily Mail, the front page, protesters will be emboldened into challenging the government to change its plans on the arrival of asylum seekers into the area, politicians fear. Last night, Taoiseach Micheál Martin insisted that despite plans to house 50 male asylum seekers in Ballinrobe and Mayo being shelved in favour of moving families in instead, this was not a U-turn. But the protesters who demonstrated against the arrival of male asylum seekers declared victory after the Department of Integration announced its change of plan yesterday after days of protests. And the plans were changed overnight, really. If I was following it relatively closely. The plans were effectively changed overnight. And then some who initially sort of triggered the protests said, right, that's it, we're off. And then others said, well, where are you going? This isn't over yet. And there's a bit of infighting going on down there, finger pointing and accusations, ones turning on each other, and so on and so forth. On to the Mirror, lastly. And Pope Francis has called for a universal ban on surrogate motherhood, which he branded a stain on human dignity. The pontiff said unborn children must be protected, not turned into an object of trafficking. In an annual speech at the Vatican, he added, I consider despicable the practice of surrogate motherhood, which represents a grave violation of the dignity of the woman and the child. And as war rages in Ukraine and the Middle East, the Pope warned global peace is being increasingly threatened. But I'm quite surprised at him focusing on surrogacy. It's not something I've really heard of any major controversy in the past. And he chose to speak about it. He wasn't questioned about it, but he says it's a stain on humanity, which seems very strongly worded, but maybe that's the mood of the wider public out there. Joined on the programme now by Paddy Diver, who's a campaigner on the defective concrete issue and, of course, a homeowner affected by this crisis. He joins us on the programme now. Paddy, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. Happy New Year.
And same to you, Paddy, and the family. Obviously, there's ongoing frustration, but you've taken to social media platforms to express your frustration and the frustration of others as it relates to this scheme. And you seem to be concluding, Paddy, that it's actually designed not to work rather than to work.
No, I'm on the same page as you there. I could be on that island or on a 100% read this page. Once every couple of days complaining about something, but then you feel like you're just complaining instead of doing something. But the frustration out there of the people, that's shocking. Like, they've been treated like Jesus. Their mental health is to an all-time low. The amount of paperwork and time, and then they're worrying about their children, and they're trying to get their houses fixed. There seems to be no help. Like, I've been chatting to the pensioners, say the vulnerables, for one example, for certain alphas. The poor woman's gone into the last rollout of her life. And this is the worst Christmas she's ever had in her life. You know what I mean? Like, that should not be happening on the last rollout. She was messed about the whole way for the last 6 months by the Donegal County Council. She was in stage three, ready to get the figure that she has to work with. Then she can give it to a contractor. She never got it in time for Christmas. So the urgency that was supposed to be there for vulnerable, that's an absolute shambles. Because there's already people at some stage one that they're getting news now that they're bypassing stage two and they're getting on to stage three. So there's nothing there for the vulnerable that they were supposed to be. And that's not acceptable. Like, I'm not just talking about pensioners. There's a lot of other people that come out there under the vulnerable category. And we always knew this was going to be right. And that's the problem with the Donegal County Council, with the project plan of it, the rollout plan of it. Until there's a good, decent team involved in this, that's got the common sense to say, right, category one, we need to make sure there's vulnerables are looked after here first. And then you go through the list, because the list is long. And if it's a scattered effect like us here, as you just take as it comes, well, people slip through the net, like a pensioner slips through the net. And the sad reality of us is, that's what people should just take a step back and just wait and listen. If one of these pensioners slipped through the net, and God forbid she passed away, that house does not go to her family. Their family is inheriting a lump of rubble, rack and ruins. And that's just not right. Like,
it's a hard way to live your life with that concern, hanging over your head.
That's a mortal sum. That's what it is. Hey, that's a mortal sum. And the amount of them is there that's doing it, will I get my house fixed before I pass away? Like, that's an absolute disgrace, a way of looking at it. And that's what makes me so angry and frustrated. And a lot of that is to do with the county council. And there's not, it's just not me I'm ranting away, but they're kind of getting an easy target, because the government are the biggest culprits here. But like, if we just stick to the points of the council first and go on to the government then after, like, the amount of phone calls that I be getting of people, like, the accessory grant, like, it's over a year now that there's people out there and they're looking for the money back for their mobile homes or their rental agreement. That's the people that's already been on the scheme. It's kind of that some of them kind of get their has got their heating on in the house. They have no money for their mobile home at this stage. They have no money for the rent. Like, that's absolutely pathetic.
It's
not been processed quick enough. It's not even on their portals. They haven't even got a program to do it. It's not even on their website of how to get them the money quick enough. So if that's the case of them people, what's going to happen when a builder comes? Now, I'm hearing rumours some contractors don't want it because they think that the money's not going to come quick enough. That's 10% at the end is going to kill them. They have no timeline when they're going to get it. They've got 40%. They could 10%. Right, that's saying on the biggest cap, that's 42,000. They have no timeline. Is it going to be a month after? Is it going to be 2 months, 3 months? Is it going to be 2 years? There's a lot of them builders that might only have an overdraft to the bank of, say, 80,000. That means a man can only do two houses at his max. So it's designed there bad for them, and I know that's not the council, that's the government side of stuff. But in the council side of stuff, like really and truly, the councillors, they're the people we represent. They're the people that should be fighting for us. Not the homeowners fighting all the time, because people don't like listening to us. Actually, we're only homeowners. So if a councillor was worth fighting for us, not one of them has the nerve to stand up and say, listen, I'm resigning. Headline news, I'm resigning away from this party, because this is not the kind of party that I thought that I actually signed up to join, a party that was going to look after the people. Because most of them councillors just sat back in their seat, taking the money. When Dara O'Brien, the Minister of Housing, when the motion was passed of no confidence for him, nobody out of Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael, well, I could be wrong, maybe one or two, but the vast majority of the councillors, they all passed the motion that his was 100%. The man that has never even came up and visited Mikey, our defective home in Donegal, they pass a motion that it's all right that he's a good man. That's pathetic.
Are they not to some extent, though, waiting to see in that, you know, we're talking, there's talk about, you know, there's more, I'm trying to make an argument here, but it's difficult. There's more analysis of science that maybe the system might evolve. You know, we've been told that the system can evolve, and this is just the first... this is just the first sort of incarnation of it. Is there an argument that the public reps are sort of saying, well, let's see if our parties can fulfil those commitments?
No. There's two different stories there. In the right hand there, if the council is fighting for emergency accommodation and hubs and even maintenance teams to go over volunteers, the councillors have got nothing on their left hand to try and start fighting stuff through the IS465 and the science-led stuff. They've got nothing there. So they might as well fight for the people on the stuff that they can, like the low-bearing fruit, as a man would say. Because in the IS465 side of stuff, that's a new level altogether. That's an absolute disaster. They actually madden me to a level that I blame them as one of the biggest culprits on this. Their delays are underpinning this whole scheme. So there, an IS465. Like, if you look at it, it's over 6 years since the IS465 was supposed to review this through the MSAA. Now, it's coming out tomorrow now in its own independent that they are going to take another year to review this scheme. So, Greg, that means that all the homeowners now, right, all the homeowners that's getting the decisions from the housing agency now, they're all still working in the old IS465 scheme. Mm. So their decisions are all based in MICA. And like the dog in the street knows now it's not. So government is allowing all the information and all the decisions now to be based on the old scheme. And they're using delay tactics again to turn around and say, well, no, you're not getting demolition. We might put a plaster over a bald wound here and we're going to decide this. And then they're delaying that IS465 is not going to be used for over a year. Like, that is where it comes to a stage that we know that the Michael Doherty was right whenever he left my group. And I remember everything that he said, the stuff that he was saying was, this government, we're not getting nothing more out of this government. They set up a scheme to get as least amount of houses fixed. And he's 100% right. Because
Are you of the view that in reality, for very few people, if any, this certainly isn't a 100% redress scheme? And there's so much uncertainty, be it over the technical side of it that you're talking about, inner leaves, foundations and all that type of stuff, that really no one's going to engage with this scheme in its current form for a couple of years, effectively, at the very least, under the current regime. Is that what you're saying, that this really is, what we're talking about here is a scheme that isn't a scheme?
Aye, it's sad with a heavy heart. Aye, that's a realization that I've come to. This government and Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, this is the way they've left it. And if you had asked me if there was another government in place, listen, I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer to that. Other, all I know is some of the stuff that's going on there. Like, even the great Debbie McCoy, right? Remember the Debbie McCoy, the amount of help that she's helped us through all this time and the information that we've got off her. Right, within 1 year, the banks and the government and the homeowners were around the table saying, right, how do we resolve this problem? Right, so, and you take Ireland under consideration. The government has done everything but come around the table with the banks and the insurances and the homeowners. It's taking the reverse focus group that was set up by Roisin Gallagher and her team. It's taken them to set up the banking insurance group. And only for the great laser aid of them and going through our terms and conditions that we kept plugging away at the banks, plugging away and telling the banks, listen, there's more examples, And we asked the Department of Housing, listen, let's meet around the table here with the banks. No, no, no. They kept saying, no, 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 we're all right. We don't need you just around the table. But until we give the banks enough examples and telling them that these houses are not mortgageable, sellable or insurable, they says, no, no, no. Survey says, that's all right, sir. We're hearing from the government that you're getting 100%. We're hearing from the Minister, Michael Martin, Charlie McConglogue, that you're getting 100%. No, you must be wrong. They must be right. But no, with the persistence of the banking and insurance group, they finally, the penny finally dropped with the banks. And they're saying, hold on a minute here. Yes, you must have a point. Right, let's meet around the table. Now, this has nothing to do with our government. No, not one thing. So that's why my faith in this government is just at an all-time low. So it is at the moment.
Yeah, but you've been in the game long enough to know as well. And when I say in the game, sorry, been around long enough to know, like, there's an awful lot of promises being made through, if there were another government in place. But the one thing that people have learned over this process, and it's been going on a very long time now, is a lot of commitments have been made, and we've yet to, some would say, sorry, some most would feel, that we've yet to see them followed through on.
No, listen, you're 1,000,000% right there. And as a quote from Michael Doherty, and it's more or less what he said there, it's very easy to shout from the sidelines. This is towards Sinn Féin here now, or any other party out there as well. But it's very easy to shout from the sidelines with them, because whenever you get into power with them and you get into the dressing room and you get togged out, right, Sinn Féin's getting close to the dressing room. And when they get togged out, are they going to man up? Can they? Well, listen, we don't know the answer to that. But I tell you one thing is definitely happening. There's work happening in the background, Greg. Can't tell you all about it, but this is where we're going at with any other parties. And we want to find out the definition of 100% redress. We're not going to be naive enough to turn around to Sinn Féin and say, listen, no problem at all. We'll put all our eggs in one basket and we'll tell everybody, listen, vote for you. You're sort of going to give us all the bells and whistles and you're just going to change everything. No, we're not naive enough to do that. What's happening in the background now is we're bringing up the definition of 100% redress. Because if you ask somebody, it could take somebody 40 minutes, an hour to tell you times, you could ask somebody. So we're simplifying it. We want Sinn Féin to publicly declare that that is what 100% is. That's what they're backing. And them or any other party that does that, well, we will back them. And anybody out there shouldn't. Why would we not, Greg?
How does that work, not wishing to throw a spanner in the works, but there is obviously a defective concrete political party that's been formed now in Donegal. And right from the get-go, it could split votes and all that type of stuff. It could get really quite complicated. Do you have a view on that?
My view on that is, I've been chatting a couple of people on that there. I definitely support them. I think their angle is, at council level, that's what they're telling me, they're not looking to go at the TD levels or nothing at the minute, so they're not muddling the waters, but they want it on a council level. They don't think enough work has been done at the council level, and I totally agree with them. I would totally ask anybody out there to, Reith, if you were thinking of running or joining for them, and you're at a crossroads, you're thinking, no, 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 go for it. We need people in there with big voices. I don't think they're going to derail anything. And like going back to the more or less Sinn Féin side of it, people think, oh, I was Sinn Féin. How can I not be more Sinn Féin? Whenever all I hear is, the only people I hear in the Dáil is Sinn Féin standing up and calling out for us, along with the Thomas Pringles. Hey, listen, we've even got people down in Limerick, like Richard O'Donoghue, that's shouting at the government and saying, listen, this is wrong. So it's not just Sinn Féin, but credit where credit's due. They're the people that's, if we ask them to call support over the Dáil, and they do it. Mm. And I, me personally, I was nothing to do with politics before this year.
But they've made an awful lot of commitments through the likes of this issue, you know, hospitals, housing, and all that type of stuff. But look at, as you say, we'll wait and see. A caller says, finally, can you ask Paddy, has anyone got their house rebuilt under the scheme, this or the old one? And how did they fare out? And were they happy with the deal? Do you know anyone that has successfully?
I do. I just don't want to name him because he doesn't want to be named. But I do. And listen, they had a wee bit of bother going through the 90-10 But they've got it fixed. And listen, the crazy thing about this is there has to be a divide and conquer here kind of thing. Because, Greg, the person that I was talking to, he can do it when he's self-employed. He can make it work for himself. Whenever he does it himself and project managing himself. And he phones and he gets his prices from his engineers, his plumbers, his plasterboarders and all the rest. When he does all the work himself, he can make it work. He can make it work for him. But in saying that, he's saving a bit of doors out of that, some and juggling it. But anybody that can't do it, like I have a brother. I possibly could be fit to project manage it myself. I'm just not at the final figures yet. But I know rightly I have a brother that's all into. He's in the computer side of stuff. Not in a million years could he do it. Not in a million years.
I hope he doesn't mind saying that. Not,
I'll say it online. The last picture he hung up, he sticked up with sticky plasters and fell off, and he closed the door. Yeah.
But, all right, okay. He'll stick to the computers. All right. Well, listen, we'll wait and see. I think a lot of people that I speak to, and it's mostly off air, are sort of sitting tight to see where things go politically in this country in terms of commitments and fulfilling commitments and stuff. But we shall wait and see.
I want to say something else there, Greg, as well, about, and that's to do with the council side of stuff, because some stuff goes on here, does put the pressure on the council to do stuff. As the contractors and the homeowners, and if the money's not coming through quick enough, and I've been talking to a couple of contractors, and what they're telling me is, one's telling me one thing, and one's telling me another thing. One's telling me that his money's coming through quick. His two houses done now, his money's coming through good enough, so he's giving them a bit of praise. The other man, he's telling me, them it's not. So really, in the of me talking to the two of them, that's because the council, there's no leaflet, there's no step-by-step guide, there's no box-ticking exercise of what needs to come for your first invoice or your second. Like, in this day and age, everything is stress. Everything is a drama. Like, if you went out to go to a construction site or you went to somewhere, you've got a plan. You know, how can we be in this day and age that there's not even a plan for the payments? A simple box-ticking exercise, like...
Yeah, and when it's done successfully, that should form a model that's distributed to everyone to say, this is the most effective way of doing it, follow these steps. I presume that's what you're saying there, Paddy.
Yeah, exactly. Just follow the steps. Like, follow the steps. Like, there's not many people that's phoning me about the frustrations and the finance side of stuff is massive to people. You cannot get on the scheme unless you've got about 30 or 40,000 to go forward, and that means pay a deposit for a kitchen, pay a deposit for your windows, pay a deposit for this or that on, a bit of the engineers and architect fees at the start of it. So that is where the banking insurance side of stuff, and that's where the government don't want a meeting with the banks and the homeowners and them, and that just, when they don't want that meeting, that means they don't want that scheme to work, and like, that's a disgrace, and like, I'm not even going to mention Charlie McLaughlin. I was going to get on to Charlie McLaughlin, but there's just no point. Just a waste of time.
Okay, listen. Paddy, thanks for that. I appreciate your time. And the more we talk about it, unfortunately, the more it seems like we're not moving any forward, and it's a nightmare. I would not like to be at this time trying to contend with it. It's complicated and it's convoluted. Paddy, thanks very much for your time. I appreciate it. Paddy Diver, campaigner on the defective block issue and a homeowner there. Now, this Friday at 11 a.m, the official opening of the Creasla Community Links Hub will take place. It's located on the main street in Creasla. Magella McFadden is Community Links Manager for the Creasla Community Association and joins us on the programme now. Good morning, Magella.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Not so bad. Now, you're welcoming Junior Minister Joe O'Brien. He's the Minister of State for Community Development, Integration and Charities to open this facility. Tell us about the facility and the services it will provide, Magella.
Yes, so Minister O'Brien will be officially opening our facility on Friday. This, Greg, was a derelict building here in the middle of Creasla for many years. And just in the middle of last year, the Creasla community had received funding to indeed come up with this community centre, a community initiative. It was through the Creasla Together initiative to create a facility that would bring the community together again and, I suppose, help with the journey of healing here in Creasla.
And how will that be achieved? Like, what will be there for the community, Magella?
So It's been functional since August. It's a bit of a work in progress at the moment, but we're almost there. At the moment, we're running several programs out of here. For example, we would have a youth group in on a Monday evening. We have a youth group here on a Tuesday evening. So we work with Veroiga and with Donegal Youth Services. We have a walking group coming out of here on a Thursday that's very successful. We have a number of support groups as well. And we would have citizens' advice and MABs coming in here once a month. So yes, it's filling up fast. The calendar is certainly filling up here.
Yeah, and it evolves, doesn't it? It evolves to the community's needs, Magella. What it is now, it might be something, you know, really quite different into the future. It's whatever the local population might benefit most from.
Absolutely. So it really at the forefront of all this is what is, as you say, what the community's needs are, and it is continuously evolving, and we're working with and building on the relationships that we've already had with some of the key stakeholders here in the Cresla communities, such as the social workers and our youth workers. We've had a lot of support from the Donegal Local Development Company, DLDC, as well as the Donegal County Council. So we're very fortunate in that respect that we've had a lot of support to get this building to where it is at the moment. And if anybody, for anybody that has not been in here yet, it really is, it's when they walk in, I suppose it's not what they expect to see. We have three office spaces here. We have a meeting room, but we have a wonderful communal space which opens out to just a beautiful outdoor area. And we really want to utilise that now in the coming year, whether that be with markets or just getting people together. In fact, we have some yoga classes running here as well over the weekends. And it's just a really beautiful spot, and we just want to make it work for the community moving forward.
Yeah, and I don't know how to phrase this, but I mean, obviously, this has been established in the wake of the awful Cresla tragedy, and it doesn't necessarily does it directly reference that, but it does sort of support the community in its recovery after it, if that makes sense.
Yes, look, we're all the time remembering the families who have lost their loved ones, the injured Greg, you know, their lives that have been changed forever. This is the funding was received, I suppose, in the aftermath of that tragedy. And that's always going to be at the forefront here. So it's about bringing the community together.
Yeah.
And there's no better way to do that than with a community centre such as this. And I would like to add that I've had great support from the Dunfanaghy Family Resource Centre, Breach Ward, and a number of the resource centres around the county. They're just an amazing example of what it is to bring a community together. Just the walking group, they're an amazing bunch of people that come in here every Thursday. And they alone, if I could say one thing, it would be, if anyone's listening here that are in and around the Cresla area now, just take that one step, get out and join a group, or come in here. Give us a call if there's something that you're interested in, because just taking that first step and getting out, it makes a big difference in people's lives. And it's making a big difference in our lives here in the community centre.
Lovely. OK. And everyone's invited in the local area to the opening at 11 a.m. In attendance will be the Minister of State for Community Development, Integration and Charities, Joe O'Brien. And again, to encourage people to go and see what it's like, you know, to see if it is for you. Because not everyone will, you know, and it's important, I think, that everyone who might benefit from it does at least go in and see the setup and, as you say, be pleasantly surprised. And I would say through the community events that will follow, as you mentioned, with that beautiful space that you have now, it'll grow and grow and grow from there, Magella.
It certainly is. It is growing and continuously evolving, as we mentioned earlier. And I would encourage everyone to come out. Everybody is invited on Friday to mark an occasion as well in this journey that we have here in Cresla of just healing.
Yeah.
We just would invite everybody to come in and see the premises. You know, you will have ideas. This, what I'd like to say to everybody, it's your community links hub. So it belongs to the community. Your ideas, come out, let us know. There's refreshments as well, actually. You'll tea and sandwiches after.
Lovely stuff. Okay. Magella, thank you for your time today and best of luck with the official opening tomorrow. I know you've been working away there, but it's nice to get the official launched on. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. It is. Thank you very much.
Bye bye. Take care. Magella McFadden there, Community Links Manager for the Chrysler Community Association. Coming up after the break, we're going to be talking about an increase in scabies. What is scabies? What to look out for? Why are we seeing an increase? We're joined on the programme now by the Vice President of the Irish Medical Organisation and local GP, Dr. Dennis McCauley. Good morning to you, Dennis. Thank you for your time as always.
Good morning, Greg. Happy New Year to you.
And happy to New Year to you and yours. Okay, scabies. We're seeing an increase in scabies. We'll talk about it, you know, what might be driving that increase. But firstly, what is scabies and how does it present itself?
Scabies is a very annoying condition to any family that have had it. It's a little mite that lives on your skin. There's about, in the average infection, there's about 16 of these little mites on your skin, and they burrow in into your skin, lay eggs, and become very itchy. And the symptoms basically are that your skin is just so itchy. There's other family members are itching at night. You just can't sleep because you itch so much. So therefore, it's not serious, but it is so demoralising because it's also difficult to treat.
And presumably, you agitate your skin even more by involuntary scratching of the area.
I think one of the reasons that you scratch your skin is because you scratch your skin. The more you scratch, the more itchy you'll actually get. And I think it's more inclined to get people who are under 15 and older people, but you generally get it in overcrowded situations. So that's why you see students quite commonly get it also. So those are the general things. School children, then nursing homes, and then in situations where there's a lot of bodies lying, which you know, in a crowded space.
If you had scabies, you would know it, would you? Or could you be itching and putting it down to something else or what?
I think, yeah, people come in and they've been scratching. Generally, they've been scratching for many weeks, if not a month, and they're assuming it's an allergy. They've taken an antihistamine. They've assumed it's something in their washing powder they've changed. They've moisturized and they come in and they're quite, at that stage, quite sleep deprived and quite annoyed. And then when you tell them they have a skin infection with these little mites on their skin, they actually get much, much more annoyed. And naturally, you just immediately repel when you hear that diagnosis. And that's why the treatment is difficult, because you have to be persistent and particular. And I think that's why it's so difficult, because people will come in and say, I've done what you've told me. I'm still itching. I'm annoyed. Sort it out.
So the mite bores into your skin, plants eggs, and then eggs hatch. Do they exit your skin and locate somewhere else, or
yeah,
what happens
they
there?
Do. What happens is the mite lives off your skin. It lives in your skin. It can, when it goes on to other clothing, it can stay there for 72 hours, particularly in sort of cold conditions. This is why I'll just go through the actual treatment, Greg, because it's basically that you have to apply this cream from your neck down, everywhere between your fingers, between your toes and your groin, between the buttocks. You leave it on overnight. And then that night, then you get up, you wash your bedclothes at a high temperature. You've had clothes which you've washed at a high temperature and dried, ready to wear. And you don't use anything, other clothes for 72 hours.
Break the cycle.
Yeah, to try and break the cycle. And everybody in the house has to do it, even the person says, well, I don't have scabies. I don't need to do it, because treatment failure generally becomes from not applying the cream properly, not all members being actually given it.
Yeah.
And then occasionally you do get resistance. The problem is that with a whole lot of other medical preparations at the present moment, we have shortages. And the problem is there's only one formulation available for scabies at the present minute, which is inevitably will increase the risk of resistance.
There was a lot of talk of bed bugs over the summer. This is something completely different, is it?
No, it is, yeah. Okay. A bed bug you will see, whereas scabies, you have to really have, they are about 0.1 of a millimeter enlarged.
Oh,
you're more likely to see the actual burrows in your skin. So it is, it's just really annoying. And then there is the new thing you would have heard on the TV, a thing called ivermectin that's used for cows. We use it also in very resistant forms of scabies. So there is a tablet, a version of them.
And it spreads through close contact. So like a glancing blow, for instance, a shaking of a hand is very unlikely for scabies to spread like that. But if you were to lie beside someone, spend a lot of time beside them in a school setting, for example, or a congregated setting of any description, that's how it's that they're getting from one person to the next.
It is, yeah. I can recall our house with the children coming back from school scratching, and we just said, here we go. And then we just do it. And it's usually sitting beside somebody for a reasonable length of time. They say it's very infectious, but, you know, I check somebody with hands with scabies out of no issue. I would actually wash my hands, but it's not that infective. It is just you have to be there for a reasonable length of time.
And we are right across the country and the continent seeing an increase. It's not really clear why, because, I mean, obviously the ways in which it transfers to one person to the other hasn't changed. So if we see more cases, it's more prevalent. But there's no real explanation as to why that is, or is there?
No, there isn't. There isn't really. I think it's so hard to actually define. I would imagine that it's a whole range of things. I think it is more overcrowding, but I think resistance is an issue, and I think that is because of the inability of us to sort of rotate the medicines that we are using. That's what happens in all other forms of medicine. If you use one antibiotic all of the time, you will get resistance.
Are they likely to congregate in any particular parts of the body, Dennis?
Well, they do. Well, funny, they tend to go in your fingers and in your groin, between your fingers and in your groin, really, and between your toes. But I think the itch is just generalized, and that's why it is so annoying.
A caller says the cream you buy for the scabies is €25. Can you get that on a medical card? You can. But the caller says they're looking for it and they're struggling to get it. But there's a general medicines. And there's no alternative, is there? There's no home remedies? I mean, obviously, you can come up with things that alleviate itching, but
there isn't for scabies. It is very particular. There is an oral tablet called Invermectin, which we use. We all would have heard it being advertised growing up for cows, because it's used for parasites also. So we use it also in cases such as that. So the oral tablet sounds useful, but I think you would always try and use the creams first, because it's really reserved for the very extreme cases, people who are immunosuppressed and so forth.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a big deal coming into the house for all the reasons you've outlined. Everyone has to cream up. You have to, everyone has to be in fresh clothes. All of the bed clothes have to be,
changed
and washed at a high. Like, it's a problem. Okay, listen, people will have learned something, I'm sure, from that conversation, Dennis. Thank you very much for your time. Anything you need to add?
Could I just say there's a very, the HSE on the website's really good information. It's the best written one I've seen, so I would advise people to go there if there's any issues.
Take care of yourself. Thanks, Dennis. That's Dr. Dennis McCauley there, who is Vice President of the Irish Medical Organisation and, of course, a local GP. Wasn't really aware of scabies, if I'm completely honest with you, but it certainly made me itch, as those conversations tend to. Particularly, this is not where I'm itching, but keep an eye out, particularly in the web of your fingers and toes and in your groin area, according to Dennis McCauley there. I've been asked to let you know that at Monaghan Road, heading towards the Glen at the crossroads in Killygordon, there's a car off the road. The caller says it's due to black ice and the road is lethal. Please be careful. The road seemed a little bit, on my routes this morning, seemed a little bit less icy than yesterday. Greg, it doesn't take a rocket science to realise this government is kicking the ball down the road and to leave the mess for the next government. It could well be them, though, you see, which people shouldn't. I think people believe it's a fait accompli that after an election, the government will change dramatically. It may not change at all. It depends on how the numbers add up. Read the Mica redress as a protest at the lack of progress on the scheme. The people should not give any sitting councillors a vote at the next election. They are to represent the people, and they are not so. The people need to stand together and make a change. Let's make a clean sweep and get in a whole new group of councillors, and let's see if they can progress as the current councillors, this caller believes, are not able to. And I'm sure many of the councillors, if not, you know, the majority of them, would say they're doing as much as they can from within. I made an appointment with a skin specialist. Doctors say to shower and then apply cream. The skin specialist recommended that you put on the cream and then shower. You do not shower first and then put on the cream. Yeah, I think the key thing is put the cream on, leave it overnight, shower the next day. Whether you shower before or after, I would say it might not have a greater impact. I work in a nursing home in Donegal. There's one case of confirmed scabies. What's the protocol? Does everyone need cream? Do we need to be treated? Is it the same protocol as a household? A local GP confirmed that it was scabies. Well, listen, we'll get back on to Dennis McCauley and see what the advice would be with a confirmed case of scabies in a nursing home setting to see what the protocol should be there. We'll try and find that out for you. In fact, we can probably check the HSC website and I'll relate that to you after we take a break for the news and obituary notices. Stay tuned. Coming up straight after, we have Community Garda Information, Garda Sergeant Eunan Walsh with the latest appeals and information.